This is Games as a Podcast, hosted by Chris and Ethan. We're two Sega alums that love talking about the past, present, and future of games, and the industry that makes them. Each week, we explore a gaming topic,
often mixing in our perspectives from our time at Big Blue and beyond. And some weeks, we'll have a guest, usually someone whose career has crossed ours. We talk about their own experiences and perspectives as well.
This week, we delve into two intertwined topics centered around the question, do players actually benefit from an all-digital future? And we're going to cover aspects like digital versus packaged goods, games, and game preservation. Should be pretty interesting.
What I wanted to talk about this week, I'm the one who suggested the topic of questioning whether or not a digital future is great for gamers, because I just got a PlayStation 5 Pro. Mm-hmm. Ended up getting that queuing for it, not realizing I wouldn't need to queue for it because there were plenty in stock.
Yeah.
And it might not have had a heavy pickup for a couple of reasons. One, of course, was the price tag. That thing is $700.
It's chunky.
It is. But the other just might be the fact that despite that ridiculous price tag, it doesn't have a disk drive.
Hmm.
And so obviously there's a benefit for any console manufacturer to be able to have greater control over software by not having discs out there in the wild. But as a customer, I was really put off by that. And so, of course, I ended up right away ordering the external disk drive as well. I am very eager to reject Sony's all-digital future. I want to continue buying discs. I love buying discs. I love buying physical media. I love having a library that stacks nearly from the floor to the ceiling. That's something that means a ton to me. I know that it's not centered to your experience in collecting and playing games.
No, definitely not. We absolutely veer in different directions. And I think for a number of reasons, probably first and foremost is that I've been at my day job focused pretty exclusively on PC gaming. So I've been doing most of my gaming on the PC. And as you, everyone probably listening well knows, I don't think you could, maybe you can buy a boxed PC game, but the vast, vast, vast majority of games on PC are sold digitally. My last console that I played box games on was a PS4. And to be honest, a lot of the most recent games I've played have been downloaded onto the PS4. So I personally find the lack of physical games to be a little better for me in terms of clearing of the mind and of clutter. So less is more in terms of having stuff. I fully appreciate that people do like to buy games and have them on the shelf like they would a book. It makes a lot of sense to me. I have fond memories of being a kid and buying a game at Toys R Us and in the car on the way back, cracking open the box and reading the manual. There's that sense of excitement, anticipation that's really great. And you can kind of reawaken that every time you kind of crack a box open and slide a disc in. So I definitely get it. But I think you are probably in the minority. I think there will always be a market for physical media. But I think the data don't lie in that I think 95% of video game revenues came from digital sales. On the other hand, there are people that are still buying Nintendo carts. There's indie devs that are putting up Kickstarters to make those games. So I think it becomes more niche and more of a hobbyist thing, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but I'm going to take it a little bit further. I'm a little pissed about where things are going because I know a lot of people are getting into this Marie Kondo mindset of just clearing stuff that they don't play or use anymore. Man, that is not me. I will tell you, I'm the opposite, actually, where there was a time, maybe 20 years ago now, where I just really wanted to get my first HDTV. Mm-hmm. And so my way of paying for that was to go to a used game store called 4J's out here. And I brought tons of my old stuff, thinking, I can trade this stuff in, I can afford to get that HDTV I want, and I'm going to just be focusing on Xbox 360 anyway. So what do I care about all of those Sega Saturn games and Super mm-hmm. Nintendo and all that? Well, you know what, Chris? They knew before I did what a disaster decision it was for me to get rid of that stuff. The person who was taking in all of the games said to me, dude, look, I'm just looking out for you. You don't want to do this. We'll happily take this, but really give it some thought. And I was like, nope, want to get rid of it, need the space. And what do you know? Now I have just found myself recollecting all of that stuff at an incredible premium. Now, there's some fun to that. But the thing is it's like I just wish I had held on to all of that stuff. And what was so fun to me then and what's so fun to me now about a physical library is that whereas, yes, of course, you can go on to Nintendo Switch Online and you can reconnect with Super Mario 64 or The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, that's all well and good, but like so many of the fun games that I want to explore are licensed games, are games that actually might not even be very good, but are just an interesting footnote in history. Sometimes a combination. I recently picked up at a used game store the Game Boy Advance adaptation of The Scorpion King, that movie with The Rock. And it was actually made by WayForward. So it's like there's this great 2D team that made this game based on a terrible license, but it's fantastic. Do you think that's going to appear on Nintendo's online service?
Unlikely. Does it need to, though?
Yes. Well,
why?
It does. Because it's a part of history. It's like not being able to access one of Stanley Kubrick's early movies or something like that. It's like, you know, he may have done something terrible, right? But or Robert Altman, you want to watch Popeye or know that you can watch it, right? Like maybe he's better known for Ready to Wear or MASH or one of those. Mm-hmm. His filmography is interesting to look at.
The Player.
The Player. Yeah, exactly. You want to be able to have access to those things, right? And physical media has allowed us to have access to the back catalogs of these game developers to see how things evolved, right? And I think that that's interesting. I'm really excited to look at it. Not only that, I think that once you get to around 2005, like the start of the Xbox 360 era, games are HD. Games are open world. Games feel pretty contemporary. They look good even today. You pick up a game from 2006 and you don't say, oh, this is old. Right? It feels,
depends on the game, but yeah.
So it feels contemporary enough to be worth playing. And so that's my kind of starting rant, is that I want to make sure that I have access to all that stuff. And what I see with contemporary games is they're just constantly disappearing because there's no physical media.
Give me an example of a game that's disappeared because there's no physical media.
So, Chris, it's funny you asked that question because so many of the games that you and I worked on together are gone now. I spent years working on Kingdom Conquest 2. There was Puzzle and Glory.
That was a good game.
Yeah, there was a Super Monkey Ball game that was like a pinball.
Peggle, I think we can say that now. Super Monkey Ball Bounce, I really liked that game. It had a really great aesthetic and really fun gameplay. I also enjoyed playing Crazy Taxi City Rush. And yes, those are games that I can't just pick up and play, barring finding some sort of old build on a phone somewhere. And maybe that is an issue for the self-mobile gaming business, is that oftentimes these games are run as a service, and when that service shuts down, the game is basically unplayable because it relied on some sort of server authentication or connection that is no longer there. But even games that were standalone, if they're not available on the stores anymore, you literally would have to find a phone that had it on there that hadn't been wiped or, you know, recycled. And yeah, I guess it is too bad. And it would be nice, I guess, to be able to pick it up and play it. But I guess I'm not angry about it. I don't think it's a fundamental flaw in society that everything's not available all the time. There's not enough hours in the day. The reality is that there's any number of works of genius, books, paintings, movies that are lost to the sands of time, and you know, physical or digital formats really have no bearing on that fact. So theoretically, you could emulate any game that has been created from the beginning of time to today and store it. In fact, you know, obviously the Internet Archive has a wide variety of older games available for download, and there's certainly some tension with the IP holders getting that stuff taken down for the sake of their own IP. But I would rather err on the side of having those things available for people to see in the past. So I guess I'm not trying to poo-poo how you're feeling. I don't think it's so big a problem to get angry about, I guess.
Well, I just look at it as, first and foremost, being a situation where I play a lot of games. I talk about that every week. Mm-hmm. Probably 40-50% of those games are retro games, 10 years old or older. I play a ton of them. And you think about also the challenge of, say, a game for Nintendo 3DS. How is it that you're going to bring that over to Nintendo Switch? Or just carry it along onto new platforms? What about Nintendo Wii? There are so many great games on that, but that's a very specific control mechanic. And so you have to go through a lot of work to make those happen. It's not that it has never happened. You can play the DS Castlevania games, for instance, on your Switch, but they had to create a second screen, a smaller screen within a screen to make that work. Mm-hmm. And that has to be done custom. The Zelda Wii games have been carried over to the Switch as well, but you have to rework the physical controls because they were used as gesture controls when they first came out. So I love the fact that those games in their original format are still available. You can go to a retro shop and buy them. You can go to Amazon and buy them, and you can still play them. You can play games from the launch of DS, like Feel the Magic. So while we're talking about iPhone losing all of those games that came around 2008, 2009 when the App Store launched, those have disappeared. But the games that came out day one on DS or PSP are still around. You can still look at Death Junior and see what was looked at as kind of the state of the art for PSP back in 2006. And maybe I am a unique, tiny voice. I certainly am different than most players, but I love being able to have access to that. And I don't want somebody to decide on my behalf what is available and what is not. So I want everything to be available, and I think the best way to have captured that was physical. And it's great, again, to go to retro stores now and see that rich library of stuff, good and bad. It's great for me to see Charlotte's Web on DS and Game Boy Advance. No one cares about that game anymore, but you can play it.
So,
and if it was an iPhone game, you couldn't.
So when the actual physical material of the DVD breaks down such that you can't play the media anymore, do you think there's a moral responsibility on the publisher or maker of that game to print more copies so you can enjoy it 100 years from now?
No, but I think that there is a timeline issue. It's better to be in a position where I can to this day and do go and buy Atari 2600 games, right? The latest Atari console actually is from Atari, and you can play the 2600 and 7800 cartridges. They work fine. You may have to clean the connectors a bit, but they work fine. And that was from, what, 82, 83? And so will they work 60 years from now? I don't know. But they certainly have been working since the 80s, and that's a nice long period of time to be able to enjoy them. When we're talking about all these iPhone games that disappeared, that's not from 1982. That's from 2008, and they're gone already. So give me a couple decades at least, you know?
If those games were, quote unquote, worth preserving, worth keeping, wouldn't the publishers have a monetary interest to re-release those in some capacity?
So I go back to Scorpion King. That is worth it from the standpoint of players that are interested in what WayForward has done since Shantae up till now. Is it worth it for Universal to make sure that that is still available? Probably not. Does that mean it's not worth having available? No, of course it's worth having available.
Well, it's still available. Artifact. You bought it, right?
Yes, but what I'm saying is I want that for everything. So I want that for the games that come out today. I want to be able to know that if I'm playing something today and I go to a store and I buy it, that I can still play it in 20 years. Actually, this is a problem even with physical media, where you look at something like Modern Warfare 2. I remember when that Call of Duty game came out, there was a big dialogue about the fact that the actual file on disk was just an unlock. It wasn't the game at all. You had to actually download the game in its entirety, meaning that if, again, 30 years from now, that game is no longer on servers and you just have the disk, there's no game on the disk.
Right.
That's crazy, right? I actually go out of my way to look for games, say, on Switch, where there's no day one update. I love when that happens. It's usually Nintendo first party that does that, because those are the games that you'll be able to pop in 40 years from now and have a perfect experience day one. That's important to me. I guess I'm surprised when people are not interested or excited about keeping our game's history intact.
Yes, so the DVD issue. So yes, a lot of discs today are just a code to unlock and download the latest. And also the assets are larger than the physical media's limits. You're talking about hundreds of gigabytes in some case, and there's no physical media, well, no practical physical media that can hold that and then that you can insert into a console. So there are some practical limitations to having physical media for every single game, unless you want to have like 8 discs, which then if you're comfortable paying $200 for your game, which you might be as an enthusiast, I'm sure you've paid more for a game, especially if you're trying to rebuild your Saturn collection. But the vast majority of consumers have very little interest in paying more for games just to have a physical box that sits around and collects dust.
Yeah, I can see that, except I guess there are so many advantages in terms of even distributing. Of course, I love having the option to trade in games. I don't do it as often now as I did when I was younger, but boy, am I glad that I was able to do it back when I was a journalist making $30,000 a year, right? Because that's where I wanted to play absolutely everything that came out, but didn't have the resources. And living in a big city like San Francisco also, like, you know, you relied on being able to trade stuff in. But even now, I love the idea of being able to buy something and knowing that if it's just not my cup of tea, maybe I spend $70 on it, but I finish it or decide I don't want to play any more of it within 2 weeks and can get $40 value towards another new game. Mm-hmm. I like that feeling a lot. I think that that's something that shouldn't be taken away from customers. I also think during the holidays of the fact that my kids, I want to be able to give them gifts, right? And have something to unwrap under the Christmas tree. That's really great during birthdays, right? It's super cool to have something that is physical that they can hold, that yes, they can open the box and you know, look at the instruction manual and really get excited about it. I remember a time when my daughter, when she was about 7, went with us to the mall and she picked up for the 3DS a game called Fantasy Life. And while we were at Bodine Bakery just eating our dinner, she had torn open the box and she was looking at the color map and she was already starting her adventure mm-hmm. in her head, mm-hmm. right? Before she had even gotten home and popped the disc in. And I just love that. That's an experience that I don't want to go away. There's just so much to that that is, I guess, tied certainly from a nostalgia standpoint to my love of games. Even seeing a younger generation respond really well to that, it's a shame to take that away.
For sure. And I think there will always be a market for physical games. I think there certainly is something to the physicality. You know, the difference, I like to read physical books. I know I have friends who are perfectly happy reading on a Kindle, probably because they read way faster than I do and just blitz through them. But there's something to be said for the physicality of having that book in your hand and reading it. So certainly is there. Look at the resurgence of vinyl. Yeah. The kids today love vinyl. And I think there's something, one, it's an analog technology. There's also this physical thing, you know, nice big picture to look at. So I do think that there are arguments to be made to have the physical media. I just don't think it's a reasonable expectation to want to be able to pick up every single game as a physical copy. It's just not going to be, it's not going to happen. First of all, you just know that as a fact. So it's just going to cost you more and more money as fewer and fewer games are released that way. And they're usually used nowadays as kind of just pre-order campaigns, you know, get a physical copy, get also a statue or something just as a way to squeeze more money out of the consumer, which, you know, you're happy to pay that premium for that physical copy. So I don't think there's any harm being done.
Well, so I think that this is maybe not common, but not as uncommon as many might think. We have multiple Switches in our house. Mm-hmm. In our case, we have 4, one for every family member. That's probably extreme. But nonetheless, we have a library of physical games, and that is fantastic because any member of the family can just choose to play whatever they want on whatever device they want without having to worry about rights and permissions and all of that. That's awesome. That is something that I would miss terribly if it went away.
For sure.
Just recently, I played Astrobot and loved it. I still think it's the best game of the year. One of my buddies came over. We were talking about it. I'm like, hey, I just platinumed this game. Take it home. Enjoy it. Play it. Have a good time. I couldn't do that if it was a digital copy, right? I can evangelize and make sure that people actually can get a copy of the game in hand. Remember back when the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 were being released and there was a huge controversy about Xbox One requiring you to check in online to make sure that you actually had the right to play that game. Whereas PlayStation 4, Sony went out of their way to say, yeah, just let a game be something that you play among three or four of your friends and share.
Totally get that. And there's nothing that publishers would rather do than charge every single person that plays the game a license fee for it. And even I think the summer Steam updated their terms of service. So at checkout, you get a pretty clear message that you are buying a license to play the game as opposed to actually buying the game. And I think that's the result of a recent California law that basically requires more transparency in terms of messaging to the consumer what they're actually paying for, which I think is good for the consumer, definitely, to have a better understanding of that. There's definitely, there's some tension that I'm very sympathetic around, like ownership and what, you know, what you're paying for. And yeah, again, more power to you. If you get a ton of joy opening that plastic box and popping a cartridge or a disc into the system and it sparks joy, more power to you. I just don't think, certainly the market has spoken in that I don't think consumers mind downloading stuff. We're so used to it now. Everything's downloaded on your phone. Physical media are, you know, besides USB stick drives, which are becoming increasingly rare, everything's just online all the time. And, you know, we could probably talk about the societal detriment that creates, but that's kind of another story altogether. Again, physical media is not going to last forever, 30 to 100 years from now, if you're lucky. And that's if you're, you know, maybe not playing the game and just keeping it wrapped in plastic on a shelf. So, and again, like 50 years from now, are your great grandkids going to give a fuck about playing Grand Theft Auto 3 on the PlayStation 2? I don't think so. And maybe that doesn't matter. I mean, maybe it's a personal issue for you, obviously. So, and you feel strongly about it. And I'm not trying to poke or make light of it. I just I think it's just the world we live in, and I think there's way more content to consume in one's life than it's even, you know, remotely possible. So I don't get too hung up over not being able to play a 20-year-old console game on the original console.
Yeah, I understand that, and maybe my family is not the best target for that, simply because my son likes to consider himself a hipster gamer. Like, his birthday last year was getting a Nintendo 64 and Donkey Kong 64, right?
Awesome.
Yeah, and so that's his specific thing. So there's a chance that his kids will be interested if he passes that focus on retro games along, and that just becomes kind of a unique family quirk. But to your point, that's unique. That is certainly not something that is going to be most families. And probably by the time we're talking grandkids, everything will be digital, and it will be an anachronism like cassette tapes.
Well, it's funny you say cassette tapes, because cassettes are actually popular with kids these days. So if you go to like a concert at the merch table, they'll often have cassettes of their albums.
Huh.
So I do think there's a, you know, cultural trend, and things phase out and things come back. And I do think it, in this case, and I think in your son's case, there is some satisfaction. If you grew up a digital native where everything is just streaming to your screen, there's some tangible joy that you get from playing with a physical thing, be it a console or putting a record on a record player. You're interacting with the world as opposed to this stream of data coming to your eyeballs. So there's definitely something very satisfying about it. And to be clear, firing up a Dreamcast and playing it is a fun experience, and it is unique. It is more unique, or it's different. It's different, I should say, than playing an emulated Dreamcast game on my PC or on a product that Sega sells you. So it becomes more of an experiential thing. It doesn't have to be the primary way to do it. I think it's just another way to enjoy games. And similarly, I've gotten into pinball recently, and I love the analog nature of that. You know, there's something, you know, just the physicality of the metal ball rolling and trying to figure out, you know, what the rule set is for a specific table. And it's not dissimilar to that feeling of, you know, playing with something, playing with a console, holding a controller in your hand. So,
yeah, actually, pinball, much like my saying Scorpion King is way better on Game Boy Advance than it deserves to, the Addams Family is kind of legendarily one of the best designed pinball game machines of all time. And what a weird brand to be tied to that, but that's one of the most famous ones.
Yep.
And yeah, it, you know, there is something tactile, there's something great about that. Now again, this, I don't know how much this would resonate with others, but my son and I love in the Bay Area to go to one of a handful of retro game shops, and it's our version of antiquing, mm-hmm. right? So what we love is to go and find a game that we know is great, but is hard to find. Actually, of all things, Gunstar Superheroes was one of those. My son was just trying everywhere to find that. It was very hard to find. One store finally had it, and it was like 4 months before Christmas, but I bought it just to hold on to for Christmas because it was so hard to find. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to look at that and ask yourself the question, when you pop in that cartridge, oh, how far did the person who originally owned this get in the game? Because their save file is usually still on there. Mm-hmm. And if someone writes their name on the back, it was probably a kid who was bringing it to school, right? I think that that type of thing is really interesting.
For sure.
Just knowing that some of these games, I bought Chrono Trigger for more than $200 on Super Nintendo, and it was not even a mint copy. But it probably went from hand to hand to hand. I may well be the fourth person to own that cartridge. And I love that. I might not be able to know who had it before, but there's a story there.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, like you said, it's your version of antiquing. I play vinyl, and something I love to do is go into a record shop and just explore and dive for things, because you never know what you're going to find. You could go online and buy Gunstar Heroes, and you would probably pay a premium. Maybe you pay more than you did at this particular shop. But I think, again, it's experiential for you, right? It's not necessarily the acquiring the thing. It's kind of that experience of going to the store and looking and seeing what's there. And it's a great experience, and it's a very much a hobbyist experience, right? You're spending all this time among all these games that you love, and maybe you find something. Whereas if you had this list of games, you could go online and pay top dollar for them or whatever. It's just not quite as satisfying as the being out in the world and discovering.
Yeah, and also, again, this is very specific to being in the industry, but Sega just recently announced that they were delisting some of the Genesis collections.
Yep.
And that's a real bummer. I worked on some of those Genesis collections, and it was such a great and prideful moment when I went into one of those retro stores and just in one of the kiosks playing, just for people to come up and try, was Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection on PS3. Mm-hmm. And I was able to bring my son over to the kiosk and roll the credits on it and say, look, there's your dad's name.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that just feels so good. But like in a digital world, those things go away.
Can go away. Yes.
Can go away. Yes. Yeah. And so I guess, part of it is the archivist, the person who loves the antique nature of these things. And so maybe the focus is narrow, but it is remarkable to see the shift from all of the anger that came from the idea of Xbox One requiring those digital check-ins to now people being so comfortable with it that it seems a non-issue. And it's become harder to find games in stores. So when I said at the very start of the episode, I went and got Dragon Quest 2D HD, I went to the GameStop that I go to very often during my lunch breaks, and it was gone. It was just an empty wall, and I had to go to Best Buy, went there. It was not on the shelf. What was on the shelf was like maybe 7 or 8 Switch games.
Yeah, it's slim pickings there, for sure. I think that's also a reflection of just it is digital versus physical, but it's more on a higher level in terms of if you want a game or if you want anything, many people just go online to get it and have it. There's only so much inventory a given store can have on hand, and it's hard to compete against endless inventory online. Best Buy's maybe take a little longer, but certainly GameStop is going the way of the local bookstore, right? In San Francisco, I feel very fortunate that we do have a lot of bookstores that cater to pretty niche audiences, or just even, you know, I would argue readers are a niche audience these days, but you look, you know, nationally, there aren't many, certainly not many independent bookstores, and GameStop is quickly going that way.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that, and everyone at the GameStops can feel it. It's not the perfect place to go to buy goods because I have long ago gotten tired of being asked, would you like a protection plan with that? But nonetheless, that is a piece that overall I do appreciate. I like that feeling of going somewhere to pick up something special and to talk to people who love games. Mm-hmm. and to be able to just chit-chat almost like you're at Cheers, right? And they've played all of the new games that have come out, and boy, they have opinions. Mm-hmm. And that's so much fun. That's such a great part of the experience. That's something that I really regret seeing go away.
Sure. It I don't think it goes completely away. It just changes, right? So if you want to have healthy discourse about games, you can go to Reddit. There are discords of retro gaming enthusiasts where you can go and you can get excited about the games. Again, you're removing that physical aspect, and maybe that's one of the things you appreciate the most is being out in meet space and talking to fellow enthusiasts and hearing their opinions and mixing it up, so to speak.
Well, I'm going to take what might be kind of a controversial position here, where I would say that one other big advantage of physical is that it affects the art form itself, in my opinion, positively. So I believe that the peak of the art form was Gen 7, was the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Wii. And one of the reasons for that was because we had made it to HD, we'd made it to open world, we had produced games that required you to kind of get it right in one go. So you couldn't just launch something and iterate and get it better over time. Mm-hmm. It had to be something that felt complete in box day one. It was easier to review. It was easier to talk about as a complete product. And they didn't have their handout for more, mm-hmm. right? It was just like one experience at one price. And I think that the physical limitations of how games were distributed actually made them better, more like films, more like books. Now, you could argue that that's not better for the medium overall, and there's an argument there, but I personally feel that that was what made games great at their greatest.
Okay, counterpoint. So digital delivery mechanisms facilitated developers that could not get their games in front of eyeballs to do so. I think to maybe a fault now, there's so much content available online to discover and to play. The retail gatekeepers are no longer the ones that decide what an audience is, which I think is very empowering. You get games like Balatro, which may never, ever have gotten into my eyeballs 20 years ago. So I think what is maybe challenging for AAA titles these days just means there's more competition. And I do understand what you're saying about the need to having kind of this finite finish line. Okay, the game ships, it's day and date with the movie, or there's a retail ad campaign going, it's got to get out and it's got to, you know, you've got to be able to plug it into your console, put the cartridge in there. So certainly that can produce gems, but it can also produce absolute turds, games that have to ship by a certain date and be ready to go. So I guess I don't agree necessarily. I think there are benefits to having games that get better over time. The early access system on Steam has produced some amazing games, and that's because developers were able to get a game that, you know, is a great idea and maybe some good core mechanics, get it in front of an audience and allow them to really hone it and to produce something that's fantastic that they probably wouldn't otherwise been able to do. So I just think it's different. So, and I don't have maybe quite as strongly colored rose-tinted glasses as you do about the halcyon days, so to speak.
I can see that. And I also think it's a good argument that we have more voices now, and that allows us to see different types of games because distribution has been democratized. Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. I will counter simply by saying that that also comes with decision paralysis.
Well, so yeah.
So much.
Welcome to capitalism, baby.
I know, but think about back, say, when Nintendo 64 wasn't going to be able to bring players Banjo-Kazooie, because it just was not tracking to be a holiday release as intended. And then suddenly it shifted over to be Diddy Kong Racing was the big game that holiday. There is something about having a much more limited set of games that everyone talked about and got behind and got excited about that was kind of fun because you were going to play all of them, right? One way or the other, you rented them, you bought them. There was enough out there for people to feel like it was a rich set of options, but not so rich that they couldn't be an expert when it comes to any given system. You listen to any retro game podcast, Dreamcast is an example. You have people who know every game in that library backwards and forwards. It was small enough to make that possible.
Well, that's
big
also,
enough.
Yeah, but it's also small because it was nipped in the bud before it had a chance to mature. If you look at like the Super Nintendo, I just remember going into like toy stores in the later phases of that console's lifespan. There are hundreds and hundreds of titles. A lot of them, probably the majority of them, are shovelware, things that were, you know, put out on a $5 and selling for 10 kind of thing. So I don't think physical media necessarily, well, I guess technically, yes, it does restrict or narrow the scope, but I still think that paralysis was there. And also the industry itself was much smaller. So I can certainly, you know, the games business is huge now, and there's a lot more disciplines and type of people working in games than there were 20 years ago. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily think it's because 100% because of the physical constraints of the media.
No, you're right. But and I recognize as I go on this rant that I am to a good degree an old man shaking his fist at the clouds. But here's the thing. It did affect me. When you and I first met, one of the things that I know I brought to the table was I knew the medium of video games as well, if not better, than anyone in the office at Sega.
Yeah,
I knew everyone's products. I was an expert there. But by the time we got to working on not just the console stuff and Sonic and all that, but all the digital stuff, that expertise that I worked so hard on was like, what is that? What value does that even have anymore? What does it even mean for me to be an expert that understands all the games when you're also having to factor in Zynga games and Facebook and mobile games? Like, it got so broad that I lost my position as being an expert. I felt so much pain when I watched the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt, right? Because I was one of those old guys that could just call it. I knew what was good and what wasn't, and I was taken seriously when I said, this is good, this is shit. Then suddenly it was all metrics-based, and it's like, wait a minute. What happened to the qualitative discussions? And, you know, that shift happened with digital because suddenly the market exploded. There were too many games for me to ever be able to say, I'm an expert in all of this, right? And I missed that spot in the sun. I loved being in that position, and I had it taken away by digital media.
I don't think it took it away. It just changed. I think you still bring a lot to the table, obviously, both, you know, personally and professionally. And I don't think I think your expansive knowledge of games is an asset to, you know, to any company or game developer. The business has certainly changed, right? Like you said, metrics are a huge part of it. And I think as the games industry has expanded, like I said, more people, different types of disciplines wash in, and specialization becomes kind of a thing. So someone that focuses on one component of the business of running a game or the business of making a game, even as the team, you know, team size tend to explode as well. So yes, it goes from feeling like a big fish in a relatively small pond to just another fish in a sea kind of thing. But I don't think that detracts anything from your knowledge base at all. And I think, you know, the language of games is rich, and you have a huge vocabulary. And I think that speaks volumes to your experiences and your interests. For certain digital games, maybe kind of accelerated that because you know, they're online and you're gathering information about the way people are playing games, which does empower developers to make better games or at least target the games towards the people that they want to target. So maybe it's been rough for you in some ways to not be able to focus solely on the qualitative aspect of the games, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and I also recognize that ultimately the more we can reach out to players of a broader set to enjoy interactive media, the better. But I do think that people that really cling to physical media, like I certainly do, there's a passion for it, but there's also an anger that things changed from what feels like it was the perfect way games could be made, were distributed, and change is hard.
Change is hard. So actually a question, do you also collect DVDs?
No.
Interesting.
And I love films.
I know. So do you feel that the advent of Netflix, et cetera, has been bad for movies or visual narrative?
I don't want to answer that question.
Why not?
Because it puts the rest of my argument in a bad place. Because you're right. It's an emotional thing. I have a different emotional relationship to games than I do to films. And a big part of that is that I didn't save up my money working at Dairy Queen to get that copy of Saving Private Ryan. It was about, you know, saving that money to get Shadows of the Empire on Nintendo 64 or something like that. I think that that's a big part of it. I didn't have DVDs sitting under my Christmas tree. Maybe other people did, and that was a big part of their experience, and they miss being able to see that stuff at Best Buy. I did have some DVDs. I had some Blu-ray discs, but it was never a part of my experience, probably because I go to the movie theaters so often that that's my thing. So I would freak out if they took movie theaters away. That would really upset me. But yeah, with games, I think the other thing that has framed my experience and my entire relationship with games is the price anchoring of physical media. So you think about, there had to be that $60 or $70 price point because Target and Walmart and Best Buy all had to sell things at the same price. You couldn't be in a position where you could get Grand Theft Auto V when it was $60 at one place and $30 at another. There's very strict guidelines to keep that from happening.
Yep.
And so that has, for better or worse, framed my sense of what you are supposed to get for $60 or $70. And so I won't go on another rant because I'm already on a current rant. But I see games, when I see games that are designed to like soak up $10,000+ from a single customer, that freaks me the hell out because I'm like, wait a second, you can't be 100x times more valuable than Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, right? That breaks my brain. I'm not saying that the argument can't be made. I'm saying that I can't accept it. It freaks me out because I'm used to retail box product pricing anchoring what we consider the right price for games.
Okay, what's the most you've ever paid for a physical game?
Probably $200, okay. I think. And that was for a Super Nintendo cartridge.
Okay.
But again, it's like that's one order of magnitude greater.
Sure.
Not, you know, 100. And as I said, that is has also probably contributed to why I love physical so much, is it kind of by nature locks the content and pricing.
Maybe. Well, okay, yes. I think that these cartridges are going to become like baseball cards eventually, right? There are going to be fewer and fewer of them in circulation, and you're going to have richer and richer people outbidding each other for the final copy of GoldenEye that exists on the planet or something that is known to work. So it's just kind of a supply and demand thing. Yeah, I don't want to get onto the free-to-play thing. I think that's a sidebar for another day. So theoretically, if the world could emulate all the games or, you know, store the ROMs online so that there was this digital museum where people could, in the digital sense, experience all these games, would that go a long way to solve your frustration or fix the problem, so to speak?
I think it would be great. I would definitely support that. Mm. It's something that if there's a Patreon, point me to it. But I think that I also do like that idea of the private collection.
Okay.
I like to have my collection. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, is an important piece of that experience. I am so proud, for reasons that I couldn't even articulate, at having a literal wall of 300 Switch games. Mm-hmm. I love looking at it. I love, when I get a new game, putting the new one in alphabetical order.
Yep.
I love saying, oop, I need another row. And that I just love looking at it. It's just there's something about it that I enjoy.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a hobby, right? So when I was a kid, I used to collect stamps, and I had this book of stamps, and I'd order some stamps not online, I guess, probably through the mail, and they'd come, and I would go, oh, this stamp goes on this page, affix, and it's a collect. There's a collection aspect, and you know, you could say it scratches the collector Bartles type to some degree.
Yeah.
So, or the achiever, I guess.
Well, and Chris, if I can bring back one experience I remember crystal clear, it was a day that we were working together. It was at Sega. There was a remarkable day when Rise of the Tomb Raider and Fallout 4 were coming out on the same day. And I remember like it was yesterday saying, I'm going to take a walk on my lunch break to go to EB Games out on Market Street.
R.I.P.
I'm going to buy those two games. Yeah, right. I'm going to buy those two games, which I did, and it felt so good to pick those up and have them in their shiny new boxes. And then I'm going to go to my favorite lobster place and have a lobster sandwich. And just, it was such a great experience, the combination of those things. It was near the holidays. I came back. And throughout the rest of that workday, I had the anticipation of I'm going to be able to play Fallout 4 and Rise of the Tomb Raider tonight. So a lot of it is the pre-excitement of just having that shiny thing in your hands. That's the promise that tonight is going to be a good night.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's an event. It's experiential, right? The anticipation is almost as tasty, or maybe just as tasty, as actually starting to play the game. You know, so that's part of the human condition, right? Is looking forward to things, and certainly having it be grounded in the physical world makes it feel much more visceral than I pre-ordered this game, it's downloaded onto my PC or console, and now I can fire it up. There is certain, you know, there's obviously some anticipation around that as well, but it's not as, doesn't touch all the senses like going out into the world and buying that game and, you know, eating a tasty lobster roll or does.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm realizing as we're talking about it is a lot of my ties to it are legitimate but emotional.
For sure.
Because I can see the benefits of digital too. Like for me, I'll tell you, Chris, the best thing about digital, to take the other side, is Game Pass, right? Mm-hmm. Something where for $20 a month, I'm getting Call of Duty, I'm getting Indiana Jones, and even better, I'm getting it on PC and Xbox with cloud save, so I can seamlessly play downstairs if that's what's available to me on my PC, or I can go upstairs on the big TV and play on my Xbox Series X, mm-hmm. and it seamlessly transfers the saves, and I don't have to pay anything other than that subscription fee, and I look forward to, right now I'm counting the days to Indiana Jones, because I know that's going to unlock, and I feel good about getting it for what feels like free, and it's just so convenient. I can even play it on my ROG Ally, and often do, if I want that third device. Mm-hmm. And that's all because it's digital. That's all because it is something Microsoft has set up to allow me to play on different platforms seamlessly.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely is a big selling point to the digital nature of things, is the interconnectedness. That's not something that existed 10, 15 years ago. If you wanted to enjoy a game on different platforms, you had to shell out for many different versions. So yeah, that I agree. That's a huge, huge benefit. And it also, I think I would argue, your subscription allows you to kind of taste and try before you buy.
Yes.
You know, it costs very little to you to try a new experience, and you might just stumble on something that you wouldn't otherwise have done so because it wasn't right in front of you or just off your radar completely.
So then the future is what's most interesting to me. I will admit, like, I have a big, beautiful PC that's top of the line, and I happily get games on Steam, and it's a great experience. I like that console offers something different. Switch 2, they just announced that it's backwards compatible, which seems to indicate that it's going to be able to take those cartridges.
Yep.
And I think that for things like holiday gift giving, stuff like that, for kids specifically, a platform that's so appealing to kids like Switch, it makes perfect sense for them to continue to have physical products. But I think the perfect future is, yes, embracing our digital future and all the benefits that come with it, but also putting in a damn disk drive into your machine, making sure that games are still available at retail. So that hybrid model that we currently have is what I'd love to see happen forever. I don't think it will happen forever. I think eventually even Nintendo will say, yeah, people are so used to digital that makes it moot to have physical cartridges. But in a perfect world, I think what is best for players, at least for the next 10 years, is having access to both.
Well,
what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the future is now, right? I think the vast majority of games are bought digitally, but there are still people who buy physical, and Nintendo already is, I guess, the last one to fold in that respect. And, you know, Nintendo has generally driven head-scratchingly expensive physical media. Certainly they went to discs for Wii, but I remember just being at Sega at, you know, milestone meetings and just being amazed at like how much higher the cost of goods were for Nintendo carts and even the mini discs, significantly mm-hmm. more expensive than the other the other media, DVD media. And a lot of that was because you had to really work with Nintendo to make the physical things, because they had either owned the plants or had exclusive relationship with those plants. And so you had to get in the queue, and they're just expensive things to manufacture.
Which was a huge risk for the actual publishers, third parties, because you had to take a big bet on cartridges, and if they didn't sell, that's your problem.
Yep. So goes the myth that there's millions of ET cartridges buried somewhere in Mexico. Like I said before, Kickstarters exist today for you to back and buy a physical NES game. So I do think that the future will have a combination of both. It may not be in the percentages or proportions that you would personally like, but I do think that savvy publishers and indies will always have a market for physical goods, whether it's to drive increased pre-sales or for people to continue to enjoy their dusty old NES or legacy consoles. So I do think that there is room for both. And as long as there's folks like you that are happy to pay a premium for that, that they will exist. Just like we could talk about the Ouya, which is kind of interesting. Mm. Like, are indie consoles going to be a thing? Maybe. I think as the amount of people who identify as gamers grows and continues to grow, that there will be these interesting opportunities to create niche-like products that are address, you know, millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people. So I think we'll probably see some pretty interesting things come down the road. And I guess maybe it'll be about IP licensing and rights and things like that.
So to kind of close out, going back to the PlayStation 5 Pro, one thing that's been interesting to see is on eBay, those disk drives are going for 4 to 5 times their retail value mm-hmm. right now. So Sony didn't think that there would be a demand for that. Scalpers thought otherwise. And so now we see that imbalance.
It'd be funny if you could get a PS5 Pro for cheaper than the disk drive itself.
Yeah, for sure. But what's interesting to look at there is maybe it wasn't the best call for them to remove the disk drive for a $700 machine that clearly is being targeted to their most hardcore customers. Yep.
Or maybe they calculated that. Maybe they say, you know what, these folks are going to spend $700 and they'll pay another $300 to $400 for the disk drive on top of it. So
possibly, yeah. I mean, the stand doesn't even come with the damn thing, so that might be part of the approach. But so, and you're right about the boutique stuff. So just like you go to Barnes & Noble and you'll see LPs available now, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. You will also certainly see that Limited Run has actually been taking games that are digitally distributed only and making physical versions in limited quantities, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And then Analog, the company that makes new versions of classic consoles, they just sold out of their Nintendo 64, which is coming out at the start of next year, and I eagerly stumped up for. And so it's a small audience. You're not going to be able to sell those things in Best Buy at scale or anything like that. But there is an audience, and that keeps the conversation going. So
yeah, for sure. So it does seem like the Analog, and by analog, I just mean physical, I guess, physical ways of playing will still be around because, one, the people who own the IP, be it the console itself or the games that run on it, see an opportunity there to create a very small mini version of an old console that people will happily buy and enjoy playing. It would be interesting to see if somewhere down the road, the problem is the people who own the technology probably are not so interested. So like iPhone games, Android games. Android maybe is a little more of a thing. I mean, Ouya was based on the Android OS. To your earlier point, like a way to kind of resurrect those old games. If there's, I mean, I guess the new iPhone is that device. Not something that will come to pass. The device is the persistent console. It's really about the interest of the developer or the publisher to keep the software up to date. And a lot of reason why games either are unsuccessful on the phone and just can't continue to support it on an ongoing basis, or it's not worth their time to update the software to be compatible with future versions of the console / iPhone.
Yeah. And I think also there might be that distinction of a more casual base versus a more hardcore base, where like with film, for instance, there are lots of people who are hardcore film nerds that want to see all of Kubrick's movies or Sam Raimi's movies, what have you. And so they'll hunt those things out. Whereas there probably is an audience of people that really want to see every episode of Dragnet, but probably not as many hardcore old TV nerds, right? Because TV by its nature was more casual. There was more content. And so I'm not too concerned if you can find Dragnet or not, but if you couldn't find Barry Lyndon or something like that, I'd be upset. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there might be that distinction too. But either way, it's certainly a rich entertainment category that we focus on, and it's just gotten bigger. And I think it's important to remember that even when you feel like you're no longer the prioritized customer in this ecosystem, people still want your money.
Oh, definitely.
So they're still going to make something for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of stuff out there, and there will be a lot of new things that will delight you, and you'll feel really good about spending your money to enjoy. Yeah. I look forward to seeing what comes next, both in games and devices that run them.
Well, I'll continue to buy stuff physically, and I'll continue to not loan those games to you because I would otherwise, but you have already dismissed that part of gaming.
We'll see. We'll see. I'll probably pull the trigger on a Switch too, so I might be hitting you up.
Oh, there you go.
We'll have to figure out a library card or something. So.
Sounds good. Well, Chris, thank you for chatting. This has been a passionate topic for me, as I think you can imagine.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And anyone listening, I'd love to know what your thoughts are on physical versus digital. Do you still focus on buying game discs at Best Buy or GameStop, or did that stop 5 years ago?
And I'd love to hear if you agree with Ethan that the golden age of gaming has already passed us by with the Generation 7, or what you think the golden age of gaming is or was or will be.